valley and mountain, river and plain, through wind and storm, rides Anne of the Airlane.
Radio Inspector Morrison, co-pilot Peterson, Zeb Abercrombie, and Bobby Baker have just left the Tyler Sanitarium in Springfield, where they have learned the secret of the radio room that is hidden in the hospital. Besides learning that the room is also used for the cutting of rough diamonds, they have heard a radio conversation with the transport plane that is carrying Jack Baker, Ann Burton, and two members of the smuggling gang to Cape St. Roque in South America. Secure in the belief that Jack and Ann are quite safe for the time being, our four friends make their way to the place where they have left their car. And although the automobile was securely locked, they find a note on the steering wheel. This note, written by Dr. Tyler, owner of the sanitarium, warns them not to make any further investigations of his property. Is this a sinister admission that Tyler is the mysterious doc that is known to head the smuggling ring? If not, why is Tyler so belligerent in his attitude toward Pete and Morrison? Suppose we listen in on the conversation that is going on in Pete's car.
Sleepy, Bobby?
Oh, gee, no, Pete. I feel like I could stay up the rest of the night. I'm going to try to pick up Jack's plane the minute I get home.
What we'd better do is get some sleep, because we got a lot of things to do. 4 o'clock. I'll say we're going to get some sleep. It'll be daylight before you know it.
We'll just tune in for a minute, shall we, Pete? I want to try to get Jack on this frequency Mr. Morrison gave me. You never can tell what might be happening.
All right, Bobby, but not over 5 minutes. I have to look after you while Jack's away, and that means I see that you get some rest.
Well, it's sure swell of you to stay at our house, Pete. Gosh, I'd hate to stay there by myself.
You'd never go to bed if you did. Well, here we are.
Yeah. Maybe we ought to put your car in the garage, Pete. Somebody might come along and...
And steal it? No, Bobby. Well, the jalopy gets this old, you either have to walk off and leave them or you trade them in. Nobody ever steals them. But I still don't see how Tyler got inside this boat to put that note on the wheel.
Well, I thought maybe it wasn't Dr. Tyler at all that put it there until we showed the note to Kay. But she says it's Doc's handwriting all right.
Yeah. Got your key, Bobby?
Yeah. The light switch is over there, Pete. That's it.
Well, at least you haven't had anybody around sticking notes under your door.
I sure wish Mr. Morrison had let us keep that note. I could have gone over it for fingerprints with my outfit. Well, you can't tell what we'd have found.
That's just why Art kept it. To send it in and let Washington have a try at seeing how many prints they'd find on it. It'd be funny if Tyler turned out to have a record of some kind. And a guy that can open a car without breaking the lock isn't exactly on the square.
Well, it might have been the same fellow that figured out the way to switch those two rooms in the hospital basement, Pete. You know, getting into a car would be easy for a man like that.
And that checks it all back to Doc Tyler, which is just what I've been thinking all along. Well, let's have a listen to the radio for a few minutes, Bobby, and then we'll hit the hay.
All right. We'll have to wait a minute or so until the set warms up, and then we'll try calling. Yeah, but suppose Jack doesn't have the headphones on, or maybe... Oh, gee, I never thought of that. Suppose Dick or Joe is handling the radio on the transport.
Yeah, that's a thought, all right. Well, we have to figure out something to say so that it won't give the whole thing away in case one of those fellas are listening. Now, let's see. Oh, I'll tell you, we might use the initials they use at the hospital station, TS. That won't be against any rules, will it?
No, not as long as I give my call letters first. Those fellows are the ones that are violating the law by just giving initials. I guess I'll try that. There, that's it. Now I'll try it. T.S. calling V.M. T.S. calling V.M.
And there's the hospital station. They're on the government frequency. Wonder if they could have managed to...
I got him, Pete.
I heard him. The other fellas must be asleep. This is your chance, Bobby. Go ahead.
Jack, this is Bobby. It's not T.S. Are you all right, Jack?
All okay, Bobby. You gave me quite a start. Coming in on this frequency. Everybody okay back in Springfield?
Yeah, we're all right, Jack. Where are you?
We're skirting the South American coast right now. It's Bobby, Ann. He's picked us up. Are you by yourself, Bobby?
No, Pete's here with me. He's going to stay with me, I guess, until he leaves. Where are those two gangsters, Vic and Joe?
Sound asleep in the cabin. How did you get this frequency?
Mr. Morrison gave it to me. Maybe I'd better not say any more, Jack. One of those fellows might wake up.
That's right, Bobby. I can't take any chances. Tell Aunt Hattie that Ann is okay. We'll try to drop a telegram the first chance we get.
We heard about Ann when Vic talked to their station. We found it again, Jack. Gee, I can't wait to tell you all about it.
Afraid you'll have to, Bobby. I can't talk anymore. Vic or Joe might wake up. Keep a stiff upper lip. And keep tuned to this frequency. I'll try to send you word every chance I get. So long.
Well, Ann, it looks like we're in communication with Springfield, all right. Makes me feel just a little better to know that Bobby's okay. Never know what those fellows might try there.
I thought for a minute that some of the gang had stumbled on a government wavelength, and that would have left us without any way to send word.
Yes, and it would have been curtains as far as I'm concerned. Because the first time headquarters sent instructions, and they were intercepted. Well, they would know that Jack Baker isn't the smuggler these boys think he is. And then, ouch.
Well, anyway, we don't have to worry about it now. Oh, look, Jack, isn't that coastline down there gorgeous in the morning sunlight?
Yeah, I'll say it is. And that just reminds me. Wonder what Bobby and Pete were doing up so early in the morning.
Early? You've probably forgotten, Jack, that it's only about 4 o'clock back in Springfield. They probably haven't gone to bed yet.
Say, that is right. I've forgotten about the difference in time. Here it is 7 o'clock already and only 4 back home.
Seems to be terribly hot for so early, doesn't it, Jack?
Well, no wonder it's getting warm. We're nearly to the...
Hey, what's all the conversation up here? Sound like a sewing circle.
What time is it?
Must be nearly noon the way the sun is beating in.
5 hours until noon, Morgan. It's only 7 now.
7? It's hot enough to fry an egg on those wings right now. Where are we, anyhow?
As I just started to tell Ann, we're almost to the equator, which accounts for the heat this early in the morning.
Just how long does that mean we'll be in the air?
Oh, I'd say we'll be making St. Roque in around 3 hours.
Boy, oh boy, did I sleep. Did I have a funny dream? I thought that I was stuck in that pitch lake back there in Trinidad, and that Jack was trying to pull me out with this plane.
That reminds me, Baker. Did you pull on that landing gear yet?
I retracted that hours ago. Had to. It was holding us back. Too much wind resistance.
Do you suppose the pitch came off the wheels, Jack?
All we can do is hope so, Ann. Say, Joe, how about bringing out some of those sandwiches? One of those coffee bottles. Breakfast might be in order.
Okay, Jack. I'll see what we got.
We just got the one bottle of coffee left. So go easy on it.
Lucky we've got plenty of water, especially in this heat.
Yeah, the tanks are full. And it's a good thing, too. Because there's no water except the ocean within 10 miles of our landing field at St. Roque.
Which means that it's pretty precious liquid. Oh, that's fine, Joe. Thanks.
Here's yours, Vic.
I suppose I should be serving the breakfast. That'll be part of my job when I get to be an air hostess.
You'll have a long time to practice serving lunches on that tram steamer on your way home, gorgeous. They don't have the same steward service on the luxury liners.
Oh, I don't think I'll mind it much at all, Morgan. Except that I would like to notify Aunt Hattie where I am.
We'll see that Aunt Hattie gets word. But you sure won't get any chance to send word to anyone else. And what Hattie finds out won't do the law no good. Say, what is that down there, Baker? An island?
Well, it looks like it. I hadn't noticed it before. We're out of sight of the coast. Yeah, it's just one of those little islands along the coast. Too small to be inhabited.
Well, that one is. Anyhow, somebody has got an awful fire on it.
There is a lot of smoke coming up from there. You don't suppose that a boat could be on fire, do you, Jack?
Well, it might be. We could drop down and have a look.
No, you don't, Baker. We just keep right on going.
Not so you could notice it, Morgan. It's one of the rules of the sea that you investigate anything like this. And that's what we do. May not be a thing, just a fisherman or something. But we'll go down a bit and see.
Couldn't be no trees burning. Of course, there don't seem to be anything there but just the sandbar. And that smoke is coming from the middle of it.
Jack, I can see someone there now. See?
We can drop a note to somebody on the coast. We don't have to land. We're behind our schedule now. The dock is getting plenty sore.
The dock can get sore if he wants to, Morgan. That fellow down there is waving a signal of some sort. And that's a distress sign in any language.
But you won't have room to land, will you, Jack?
Oh, plenty. That island is a good mile long. And looks plenty level. We're going to have a try at it.
I think we should, too, Vic. We can't tell when we may be waving our shirt, hoping that somebody will come along and pick us up.
You can see him plainly now. Just one lone man.
I'll come in low to show him that we've seen him. Then we'll swing over and come in from the other end. That'll give us a longer run.
Gosh, he saw us all right, but he just keeled over.
Maybe he fainted.
Okay, but if somebody else has got to do the explaining to the doc, what are we going to do with that guy when we get down there?
Pick him up and take him to the nearest habitation, I guess.
And take a chance of having the ship spotted? Nothing doing. You got another thinker coming, Baker.
All right. Then we'll take him to St. Roque. But we'll worry about that when we find out what's the matter with him.
He must have been marooned there. No wonder he fainted, what with his heat and no shelter of any kind.
We'll soon know. Get that gear out, will you, Joe?
Okay, Jack. Have it in just a second.
Have to watch out to miss that fire he's built there. Too much gas to take a chance on that.
Jack, hold it. Don't land.
What's the matter?
The landing gear. It won't get down.
Give him a hand, Vic. Get that gear down.
All right, but if it don't work...
It'll have to work. There's a life at stake. Is it giving any?
Not a bit, Jack. Do you suppose...
That's it. That asphalt. Got that gear stuck. We've got the jar loose.
But how can you, Jack? It seems to be stuck fast.
I've got to climb and then dive. When I pull out of the dive, you fellows jam down. Then the gravity will help throw it out.
Listen, Baker, we got to keep going. Let that guy stay there.
We're going down. Hang on, Ann. Now, jam that gear.
Won't give, Jack. The pitch is holding it like glue. It just won't get down.
Look down there, Jack. That fire. That man has fallen across some of the wood or whatever it is, and the fire is eating its way to him.
That means we get down there if we have to crank up doing it. How close is that fire to him?
Not so awful close. It's getting closer, Jack, and he ain't getting up.
Oh, I see him now. I think we've got time to do this. Strap yourself in, you two. Tighten your strap, Ann. We're going to get that gear loose. Now watch out.
The sea that no risk is too great to take when a life is at stake. But how will Jack break the landing gear loose from the tenacious clutches of the asphalt on the wheels? Can he be planning to land in the ocean and take a chance on beaching the plane on the sandy shore? Or does he intend to try landing on the fuselage and court almost certain catastrophe due to the hundreds of gallons of gasoline that remain in the huge tanks? Or is there yet another solution to this life or death problem that confronts him? The answer remains sealed in the next thrilling episode of Anne of the Airlines.